Lindqvist. I'm from Uppsala Space Observatory in Sweden. And I will give you an update or overview of the capabilities with the European VLBI network. And when I prepared or sent in the abstract, Pierre asked if I also could cover the SKA. I'm not really involved in the SKA, but Uppsala is certainly involved in the SKA and in the pre-construction of the SKA. So I will try my best. I'm more involved in VLBI, and I'm at the moment I'm the chairman of the European VLBI Network Program Committee, so I'm reading all the proposals. So my ambition really here today is that you should get inspired to use the EVN for stellar winds. So I will show you some highlights about that as we move along here. So VLBI, with VLBI, you typically observe high brightness temperature from synchrotron processes, but you also observe masers, as we have heard during the meeting. And in the next talk, we will also hear more about VLBI observation of AGB stars. We also observe normal radio lines towards bright continuum sources, say OH water and OH1 and formaldehyde. I listed a few of the highlight, sort of typical science areas we do with VLBI. And in red, you can see what is related to the subject of this conference, astrometry. I will tell a few very nice results concerning astrometry, galactic masers, stellar evolution, and supernovae, and transient, various types of transients you can use the EVN for and VLBI. So VLBI is, as you know, I mean, really the quest for high resolution. And as you see, the picture on the right here is a resolution of 1 milliarcsecond if you would see the moon of Io from Earth. So this is a typical resolution you would get with the typical VLBI observation with, say, the EVN. So you will go down to 1 milliarcsecond or so, depending on the frequency. So the EVN was formed in 1980, and today, and Uppsala, where I come from, was one of the pioneers, one of the grounding fathers of the European VLBI network. Today, it consists of 15 major institutes, and it includes the Joint Institute for VLBI ERIC, it's called ERIC nowadays, JIVE, and they operate the correlator in the Netherlands, in Holland. They also support the EVN users, and that I think that is extremely important, and that's proven to be very, very efficient and very good for to get more people involved, so you don't just have the black belt experts using VLBI, because we want all of you to use the EVN. It's not difficult if you get help from the people at JIVE. I will show you that. So last year, we actually, JIVE was formed in the 80s. Last year it was new establishment called European Research Infrastructure Consortium, ERIC, and I will not go into the details why we formed that, but that has proven to be very, very good. We do operate an open policy, that is, all of you can apply for time, you don't have to be a member of the EVN or anything like that. And I can also say that the EVN is... There's no central budget at all for, which means that the different stations contribute to money and effort of people, resources, like me, myself. And so it's really a good example of a distributed European facility. So the network, and as you can see on this picture here are the different telescopes across the globe. And you can see that Europe is a pretty big place. We have a telescope in South Africa, in Puerto Rico, and the latest in China and Russia. And the latest additions are the three telescopes in Korea, the Korean VLBI network. And they have proven to be very useful for for the high frequencies, 22 and 43 gigahertz. Very good. So another thing that EVN and JIVE has been really involved in is something called eVLBI, and that is when you transfer the data. Normally what you did in the good old days, in the 80s and 90s and the beginning of the 2000s, you recorded the data on magnetic tape, you sent it down to the correlator, and it took for ages before you got the tape, got the image, right? But now we have started to do something called EVLBI, where we send the data directly to the correlator and correlate it in real time, which means that you can get the result almost immediately. And that was done in the beginning of 2000 or so. And most of the stations are now connected to high optical fiber networks, not all of them, which means we cannot do EVLBI all the time. But there are important stations that are not connected. For example, the station is in Russia. So the EVN and Jive is recognized SKA pathfinder when we have developed this EVLBI. And sometimes you can even do hot science. You have to cool down the correlator here. I mean, the correlator was so hot, so you have to do a very exciting science was down there. So EVLBI make rapid turnaround possible, which means that you can do X-ray, gamma-ray binaries in flaring states, and other outbursts in Myhre variables, for example, which we have done, just explode gamma-ray bursts, supernova, and various type of binaries, which we have heard a lot of about this, at this meeting here. For example, X-ray binaries. So here is the current status. We have called for proposal 3 times per year, February, June, and October. So the October deadline is soon coming up, so it's time to get prepared. And if you're interested, please talk to me today, and or I can help you to find a person you should contact. So we observed between 90 centimeters down to 0.7 centimeters, and 0.7 centimeters correspond to 43 gigahertz. It's not a full-time array like the VLBA in the US. We observe typically 70 days per year, but we are open for a so-called target of opportunity, and which means that we can be pretty fast on the sky on your target. And we are also opened up for something called outer session. And that the reason for that is really the Russian VLBI setting orbiting the orbiting Earth, which means that you have to be open for more inconvenient times, but we are doing that. So you can do both disk recording and EVLBI. We can do automated triggered EVLBI, which means that if you have a normal project observing a source, like any type of galaxy or whatever, you can have a gamma ray proposal inside, and if there comes info from another telescope, for example, you can directly generate a schedule and be on the track the new source, say, within 10 minutes. And that is interesting for this type of NOVA, X-ray binaries, and so on, which I think that's pretty exciting stuff that you can do with that type of observations. Data is correlated at using the software correlator at Jive. We have stopped using the so-called hardware correlator, and that is much, much, much more flexible when it comes to velocity resolution and so on. So that has proven to be very good. We do observe together with the VLBA, the NRO, so you can also ask for something called the global observations. And we observe with Radioastron, and recently we can also observe with the last baseline array in Australia, which means that you can start to observe with Australia telescopes, the Asian telescopes in one, and continue with the European, and then continue with the American telescopes. So advice during proposal preparation, I just put a name here, Salt Paragi. So, or you can just drop me a mail and I will contact, make sure that you get the info you need. So when it comes to angular resolution, you can see here in the table here, a few tenths of a milliarcseconds down to a tenth of a milliarcsecond at 0.7 centimeters, that is 43 gigahertz. And angular size of the largest structure depends, of course, as you know, on the shortest projected baseline. And can you say that is between, in Europe, is between the 100-meter Effelsberg telescopes and the Westerbork array. So if you have sizes larger than, say, 0.1 arc second, say at 18 centimeter, you can consider using, you can actually add the E Merlin array. So it means that you are very flexible and you can do a lot of stuff, and it's just to get your mind to it. I will not say much about the techniques. I can easily spend an hour or more discussing the different things we have in the pipeline. But I will mention a few things which is coming up, which are important here. This is the African VLBI network. And on the picture on the right here, on the left there, you can see in red, in the UV coverage, where you add the baseline from the Ghana the telescope in Ghana. And that is, and the most top the blue ones are from the heart of Bistock, which means that you can fill in the UV coverage. And that is very important when you think when you want to observe sources in the galactic plane. And this is many of the sources we are talking about here are sources in the galactic plane. Of course, we have the 500-meter telescope in China, the FAST. And soonish, we will also observe with Meerkat. And in the end, of course, with the SKA. And as Phil Diamond said at the meeting quite recently, said there will be VLBI with the SKA. So I'm taking his for his word there. But even if you have many things to say, and we have a lot of techniques, the most important thing are, of course, you, the users. So these are various pictures from the recent EVN symposia. And we can see happy EVN users gathering, and we will soon have a meeting in St. Petersburg in September. So you are important. A few of the science highlights here. As you have heard, magnetic fields is very important when it comes to high mass star formation. And methanol masers has proven to be very important when it comes to trace the the dynamics of star forming regions. And EVN has really pioneered the observations of galactic methanol masers. And just show you a few examples here. Anna Bartkiewicz from Poland and her collaborators has done a beautiful work on during a number of years looking at methanol masers to see what kind of structure they have close to the protostar, high massive protostar. And you can see here they have now a sample of around 60 sources or so, and I can see some are ring-like, some are much more complex. So they can now do a very nice statistical study of this type of structure and this type of kinematics, what is happening close to the protostars. And this is just a few hundreds of a milliarc second from the protostar. Another example is the high mass star formation. It's where we can actually do detailed studies of this. Where you can see here, for example, you can see the magnetic fields. You can study magnetic fields using using the methanol masers, or you can monitor them using the 3D gas kinematics. If you do monitoring of during several years, you can follow the structure and the kinematics of the movements of the masers. Another nice work is the so-called the dwarf nova SS-Cygni, where the Hubble showed that it has had a distance of around 160 parsec, which meant that it was much too luminous. But when we did, Miller Jones and collaborator did VLBI observations, that put it at a much closer distance, 114 parsec, which means that it fits the theory after all. So this is a nice work which we can do astrometry and get very good distance estimates on the sources. Of course, we do observe supernova. This is the classical supernova in M81, 93J. And you can see they're exploding, and VLBI have been following this for many, many, many years. You can see very nice movies of this. I think I skip a few. So this is just a few examples of the type of science you can do with EVN and VLBI. So moving away from the from the EVN. So going from the good old days in the 60s where we did the VLBI in 1968 at OnSolar, going through eVLBI where we transferred the data directly to the correlator, moving to the SKA. And you have the SKA, of course, which we believe will be a fantastic new instrument and will be tremendous, right? It's going to be fantastic. We have all these nice instruments to look forward to, and we have, of course, ALMA already, and we have seen nice data on that during the conference here, but still we don't have the SKA. So it's going to be two sites, two telescopes, one observatory, and for the phase one, the construction will start around 2018 and last around to 2023. The construction cost will be 650 million euros and around 75 million euros for the operation cost, about, give or take. You have the participating countries here, and Sweden is one of the participating countries. So the SKA organization was established around 2011 to design the SKA, and Sweden joined the SKA in June 2012. And since John, our director, paid for my trip here, I have to show a picture of him here, saying hello to Patricia Fogel, who was in the board at that moment. So that will, this SKA organization will smoothly make a transition into the SKA observatory, and that will happen soonish, I would say, I think. So you have, in the SKA, you have SKA MID in Karoo, that is the South African one, where you have the Meerkat, the 64 Meerkat dishes, plus this is already being built, and then you will add these 133 SKA dishes. So it will be a maximum baseline of 150 kilometers, and the bands are given here and on the lower. But the exact frequency coverage and so is still under being debated. And in Australia, you have the SKA Low, which covers 130,000 dipoles, and we cover 50 to 350 megahertz. And the headline science for doing this type of observation here, you can see at the lower frequencies is cosmic dawn and reionizations. But we are here up here, right? The cosmic magnetism, cradle of life, and pulsars and so on. These are where our science area lies, I would think. So this looks fantastic. And 2015, this new SKA science book was produced, and I was thinking if I should bring it as a carry-on, but this is this big. There are two of them, and so I did not bring them, but you can see they're very big. Of course, you can download them online, and there are. I just give you some example here with our titles from some of the presentations that are in this book. So I can urge you to go and look at this book, and like you can see, pulsar wind nebula, transient astrophysics, core collapse type 1A supernovae, and protoplanet disk and dawn of planets, maser astronomy with VLBI. So these are things that are related to what we have been doing here. So I think this is nice. And of course, there is a chapter also on VLBI with the SKA, which I'm involved in. So I can show you one. I have a movie which is about 1 minute. Sorry, to see if I can make that. Just to show you some that type of data you will get with the SKA. So there will be a lot of data, so get a bit better be prepared, right? global internet traffic in 2015. Right, so this is pretty impressive. But even so, the EVN will also be very good to have unique in the SKA area, because the EVN, even so, even have all these data, so the type of angular resolution you will get with the EVN is better, still better. And of course, we will observe with, we do observe with frequencies that there's not available, so certainly not for the SKA1. And so we, as an, and also, of course, that we will observe together with the EVN. It's not that the EVN will be obsolete when you have the EVN online. So so we will, it, is, it still will be unique in the SKA area. So I thank you for your attention, attention, and take any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions?
Sorry?
What are the plans to deal with all this data?
Yeah, I mean, that is, of course, up to us, right? What we should do with all this data, right? So we are an astronomer. We have to have more astronomers and more funding for other astronomers to actually work on the data. And that is an interesting issue, of course, that we will have so much data, but so little astronomers.
Other questions, remarks? Yes, please.
Yes, just to detail, the 133 SKA1 dishes will be, the 133 SKA1 dishes will be the same as the 64 Meerkat dishes, same field of view.
Sorry, I'm not hearing what you, what was the question?
About the phase one SKA.
The phase one. This one.
The 133 SKA1 dishes will be the identical to the 64 Meerkat dishes?
They will go add these two arrays, yes. Okay. But they will use both the Meerkat and these new dishes that is being prepared in Canada. That is the plan.
They will be different, but they will have if the same size.
Yes, they will be different, yes.
They will have the same size, same dimension. Yeah. Okay.
There is one question here, and then William.
It was more of a comment on the dealing with the data. So in South Africa, they're pushing to have dedicated data centers. Yes. So there's a thing called IDEA, the Inter-University Data. So, I mean, I think we really as a community need to get organized if we are going to make use of this data in a very...
Yes, absolutely.
Urgent
I didn't have time to go into that, but certainly UNSOL, as we just got funding, or Europeans, the network, we got funding for looking into how to handle all this type of data. And at UNSOL also, we hope, of course, to be, we are an ALMA regional center, and we hope to be something similar as for the SKA. That is the plan, of course, right? So, yeah. So we are planning how to do that, and how to download data, and how to handle the data, and how to visualize the data, and so on. So that is something we will start on now.
Another question for William.
Yeah, related to that. Yeah. So the data that will be released to the users, at science ready data, or? I mean, all the data reduction and the...
There will be certainly, be, I'm not sure that is clear, but there will certainly be some sort of, you will not get the raw data, I don't think so. So it will be correlated then in some pipeline, but I don't think that is 100% clear how do you have to do that.
Is that budgeted though?
Sorry?
Is that budgeted or are you counting on...
Could the next speaker...
Is that, are you counting on European
please?
Funding or how do you
no,
see
no, no,
that
it's not.
Project
I mean, this
off?
Is part of this the operation and so on. So, but it's not clear how this will be handled. And these are the thing we will do in this European think on how to solve this during the European data centers. That is the plan.
Okay, we have time for another question or remark. No? Okay, if not, thanks the speaker again. Yeah.